Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is High Availability Options for WebSphere MQ for IBM i. Today's presenter is Karen Stanley. Karen currently has the title of Advisory Software Engineer and has been with IBM for 23 years. She has worked with IBM customer support and services for majority of her career. She is currently a member of the WebSphere MQ support team and serves as one of the subject matter experts for i5OS platform and data conversion. She has served as focal point for the i5OS Common Education Conference for over 5 years and presented at Common on various topics for the conference. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Karen.
Thank you, Joseph. Greetings, everyone. I hope everybody is having a great day. Today's presentation, as Joseph mentioned, is regarding high availability options for WebSphere MQi, or as many of you, if you've been with the iSeries platform long enough, you know the many names that this platform has had, AS400, OS400, i5, and so on. Joseph, could you go to slide number 3, please? Today, our agenda are to discuss what options are available to me if I don't have a third-party product or business partner with a replication product to do high availability. What are my options? And we're going to discuss all of those that we are aware of today. The agenda, you will see we have save restore options. We're going to discuss MSO3, better known to iSeries customers as QSave, QManager. Some of the replication options that you have when you don't have a third-party application or product installed. We're also going to discuss what happens when the target queue manager, if you do have a product failover, why can it start and what can we do to start that particular queue manager. We'll also mention MQ clustering and also Advanced System I clustering, which is a separate issue unto itself, but we're going to briefly discuss it here. Next slide, Joseph. Slide number 4. Thank you. Slide number 5. The first option that we have is just regular save and restore. If you do not have any high availability products installed on your server, then you can do a save of the queue manager and restore it to a target queue manager. This particular presentation, I should mention, was originally first presented in 2006. So you will see mention of version 6 versus version 7. Currently, version 5.3 is no longer supported. And just FYI for you, version 6 of MQ will be going out of support September 30th of this year. Right now, we have version 6, again, until September 30th. And we have 7.0.1, and we just recently made available 7.1 for all the platforms. To save a queue manager, however, we do recommend that you quiesce or shut down. We like to use the word quiesce. We don't know why, but we do. And all applications that are connecting to the queue manager should be shut down. And then you can perform an end MQM, star all, option immediate, in connect jobs, yes, and with a record, yes, to take a snapshot of your definitions. And then you would want to end the subsystem. Slide number 6, Joseph, please. This slide would just shows you the commands that you can use to save a queue manager to save files, which is unique to the IBM i platform. So you would create 2 save files. And our queue managers are broken up into 2 parts. There is a queue manager library, and there is an IFS directory, or in the integrated file system, as many of you may be aware of what it's called. You have to save both parts. You can't save one without the other. Slide number 7, Joseph. Another option for you would be the queue save queue manager. MSO3, as many of you are probably familiar with it. And if you've done migrations from the previous versions of MQ to the higher versions, you probably use the alternate method that we have a tech note on and which takes advantage of using MS-03. MS-03 is supported across the platforms, Windows, the Unix platforms, as well as IBM i. Basically, this support pack saves the definitions of the queue manager. It does not save any data. How our customers use it, though, is while the queue manager is active, and it must be active to run this tool, along with the command server, it will save the definitions to a script file. No, again, no messages are saved. That script file can be FTP to another server that maybe is your backup, and it will you can rebuild the definitions using a run MQSC script, or for iSeries is a start MQM MQSC. Now in version 7.1 of the product, and this is very new for the 7.1 product, we have finally incorporated support pack MS-03 into the base product across all the platforms, which for us, we are happy, happy, happy. But that new command at 7.1 is dump MQM CFG, and you can see it documented there and highlighted in red for you what that new command is. Now, of course, nothing is perfect when it just first appears. So we have one slight issue with the command, but I've given you a workaround in the presentation on how you can execute the command from what iSeries calls the Q shell. And you can generate the definition script, but you can also generate whatever specific authorities you have for that queue manager and its definitions, and move it to a target system again to recreate those definitions and your security. But again, we do not save any data that's on the queues. Slide number 9, Joseph. The next type of option that you have are replication options. And these options are when you do not have a third-party high-availability product installed. You can take advantage of the iSeries operating system for relational database. Basically, you will be duplicating the AMQA journal and the QMQM checkpoint definition that resides in the IFS to a target system. In this graphic here, you have the source server and the target server. And I have QManager Common, which has a QManager library of QM Common. And in that library, you have a journal called AMQA Journal. And then from there, a receiver is built each time it becomes full. We start at AMQA 0000. So you can see here in the middle that we're going to take advantage of Remote Journal Association, or RDB, on the operating system as they refer to it. And it duplicates to a library on the target called Common QM. To take advantage of this feature, though, you would have to create a what we refer to as a journal scrape program, which basically reads that duplicated journal and copies or recreates those definitions or entries into your backup queue manager or your target queue manager in this case. And periodically, you will have to save and restore the QMQ check file or QMQM checkpoint from the source system to the target system. Slide number 10, please, Joseph. Within the presentation, I've given you step-by-step instructions on how you can implement this. I won't go through each step, but I wanted to give you as much information as possible so that you can at least try it in your test environment to see if it's something that is viable for you, especially in a test environment on the Q&A system. For your production environment, we do recommend some type of high-availability product since your production environments are so valuable to you. But again, here we just have the instructions. For on the service or the source systems, you set up the rational database name. If your security is really tight on your system, you may have to add a server authority entry so that the profile that you're going to use will be allowed to connect to the remote side. slide number 11. The instructions for what you need to do on the target side are listed here as far as having the relational database user and also creating what journal, remote journaling libraries and the queue manager itself. Slide number 12, please. One of the things that's very important when duplicating the AMQA journal and the QMQ checkpoint is to make sure that a checkpoint has been taken. We will take a checkpoint every 10,000 gets and or puts, combination of them. We'll also take a checkpoint when the queue manager is started. We'll take a checkpoint when the queue manager is shut down. And you can also force a checkpoint by using the record MQ image command. That's RCD MQM IMG, and that's also documented in the presentation for you. One of the things that our customers do like to do is using or taking advantage of the operating system again is they will do a job scheduler of the record MQ image to go throughout today, particularly if they don't have a lot of messages that they are processing throughout today, just to make sure a checkpoint is performed. We do recommend, though, do not do a record MQ image when you are processing hundreds of thousands of messages or you have hundreds of thousands of messages sitting on the queue. You should not use MQ as a database storage. You should process your messages as soon as possible. Otherwise, you may experience some type of slowdown when you try to do the record MQ image. Next slide, please, Joseph. We've already discussed this, but I wanted to make sure you were aware that we've listed the information here for you. We also have a tech note on when a checkpoint is taken, and that is documented in your handout. Next slide, please, Joseph. Another option that became available when version 6 of the product was released was backup queue managers. And similar to duplicating the AMQA journal, using the backup queue manager allows you to create the queue manager to fail over. But in this case, you don't have to save and restore the QMQ checkpoint file. Instead, you still have the same configuration as before, but now you can start the command or use the start command to say replay yes, and it will rebuild the QMQ checkpoint file for you. The next thing you would have to do once you're going to fail over is to activate that queue manager to be started, and that will be using the activate parameter, and you have to say it star yes. Now, you won't see the queue manager start, but it's ready to be started. So then you would issue just a regular start MQM command for that queue manager, and it will activate. Next slide, please, Joseph. I wanted to show you some of the or what the start MQM command looks like. And you'll see highlighted there some of the new parameters that we've received since version 6. You'll have the perform replay option, which I was speaking about previously, and the activate backup. And then, of course, we have some other. As the product is growing and changing, you'll see that we have some other options that are available. Next slide, please. This slide is just the online help, just to give you a little bit more information. Next slide, please, Joseph. Now, what's new for version 7.0.1 and also for version 7.1? We have a new feature or new concept across the platforms except for Z called multi-instance queue managers. Again, we are not using any HA coordinators. This allows you to have two instances of the queue manager. So you have to picture in your head, you have server 1 and server 2, but my data is stored on server 3. You can only have an active instance and a standby instance. The active instance will own all of the queue manager files while it is active and running. Applications can connect to that particular queue manager. The standby instance is just like it sounds. It's in standby mode, and no applications can connect to it. However, they are both sharing the same data that's on a remote server. Next slide, please. I wanted to list several of the new commands that we have. And again, you can only do multi-instance if you're at 7011 or higher. The first command is add MQM info, which is equivalent to doing a create MQM to create this standby instance of your queue manager. And the one thing about multi-instance on the iSeries platform, again, we will take advantage of the operating system. This is one reason that I love the i5OS. We get to take advantage of so many of the operating system features. In this case, we're going to take advantage of the remote journaling capabilities to implement multi-instance. So we have the add MQM information command. And on this, I hope you can see it clearly. We're adding an instance for queue manager, Karen, and we're saying where this journal and the journal library are going to be stored. Next slide, please. The remove MQInfo is equivalent to doing a delete MQM for a standby instance. You don't want to do this, of course, on your active instance. This is only for your standby. And basically, it just removes the reference in the MQS.ini file. The MQS.ini file, if you've never looked at it before, contains the name of all your queue managers that you have created. It also contains information of where those queue managers or where you have created or specified where the data for that queue manager resides. Next slide, please. The work MQM journal command, or journals command, it will display to you all the information about the local queue manager and the journal information. One of the things that you'll probably notice is that you have the AMQA journal and you have the AMQB journal. So when you have an active instance, one is using AMQA. When you have the standby instance, it's using AMQB journal. And you can tell which direction by looking at the arrow. If it's pointing to the right, that is the remote system. If it's, the arrow is going to the left, it is coming from the remote system. Next slide, please. Another new command that you have is the add MQM journal command. This command, like in the previous ones, will give. We are going to be using relational database. I just prefer to call it RDB. Sometimes that's just easier for me. But it adds the remote journaling information for the queue manager for you. Next slide, please. If you want to change that information, you would use the change MQM journal command. Basically, this will allow you to change a journal to be inactive or active, or for it to be synchronous or asynchronous. Next slide, please. Remove MQM journal. Now we want to, if we're cleaning up anything, we want to remove that journal information. We would use this particular command. And you would only use it for journals going to the remote system, for environments to the remote system. Thank you. Next slide, please. Here's a small checklist for you for the configuration of multi-instance queue managers. One of the things when we were trying it out on our servers that we know is very important, if, depending on the security level of your server, to make sure that your user ID and passwords match across the servers. Also, if you have QMQM user ID, make sure if you have a password on it that they are consistent across the servers. In this particular environment that we have documented for you, we've given you the step-by-step instructions that you can try on your servers. But you have to remember the environments have to be at least at an operating system of 6.1 and an MQ level of 7.0.1.1 or higher. Now, the server where you're going to store your data for your IFS, that does not have to have MQ installed on it. In my particular scenario, I did have MQ since we were using our test systems, but it does not have to be installed to take advantage of the multi-instance. Next slide, please. Here are the steps for performing a multi-instance, and I've given you, in this case, for server 1, the actions that need to be performed, and server 2, and what actions also need to be done on server 3, if any. So I'm hoping that you'll try these out. It can be a lot of fun, actually, to see the queue managers flip over. Maybe it's just me, but I like playing around and testing with it. Next slide, please. The rest of the instructions for server 2 and what additional instructions you need for server 1. Next slide, please. Now, say that you've failed over or for some reason the target queue managers are not starting. And this could be whether you have an HAA product installed or not have it installed. There are going to be times where queue managers will not start. And typically when you're contacting me or my team, we'll determine what kind of messages are being logged in the your job log, also in the QMQM message queue, or in the checkpoint job. If you see an AMQ 7432 or an AMQ 7433, we pretty much know that there's something wrong with the journal receivers. And many of you are probably already aware of what I'm going to tell you to do. And we call it the cold start because that's the only way to reset those journals and the journal receivers. Unless you have a backup of your queue managers, and then you can restore them and retry to start. We first started using cold start, I guess, when the product first came out with version 4, and it used to be a manual step-by-step process. One of our customers, because it was originally called the 12-step, he renamed or nicknamed it the Waltz, and we've kind of liked that particular name. But now we have a program, AMQOCLS4, which automates it so you don't have to remember all those particular steps. This program first came about in version 5.3, but it is valid at version 6 and at version 7.0.1 and 7.1 of the product. We have modified it since we now have multi-instance queue managers. We have modified it so that now at 7.0.1.4 and higher, you only need to specify the queue manager name when you want to reset the queue manager to start. So, again, if you're at 7.0.1.4 of the product, you only need to specify the queue manager name for that particular automated program. Prior to that, you will need to specify the queue manager library name, the queue manager name, and the size of the journal that you wish it to be. Next slide, please. We don't document the AMQO CLS4, so that's why we refer to it as the undocumented cold start procedure. But here's some additional information for you. We also have a tech note on this particular procedure so you can see snapshots of the command and what it will look like. But there's a link in the back of your presentation to that particular procedure. Next slide, please. I also wanted to show you that when you do run this program, you will get messages asking you, do you want to proceed? Because we want to make sure that you actually want to do this procedure. This first message that you see here is only valid it's valid for all versions, but this is the only message you will see after 7.0.1.4 because of the modifications that we changed. Next slide, please. This and the following slide, you will see these messages asking about backing up your journals if you are pre-7014. Next slide, please. And this is the third screen that you will see that basically says the cold start has been completed. And once you look at your panel, Work MQM, you will see your active queue manager. Next slide, please. We have a concept in MQ called WebSphere MQ clustering. Some people don't believe it's really a high availability, but we have several customers that use it as a way of having continuous application support. Next slide, please. This is a snapshot of a cluster, and the following slides give you even more information about this particular setup. But what we have here on the right are several queue managers with the same cluster queue definition. So we have queue manager 1, queue manager 2, and queue manager 3. And on the left, we have a queue manager, and we'll just call it the full repository queue manager. The full repository queue manager knows about all the queue managers in the cluster, including 1, 2, and 3. So that is why it's called the full. However, the queue managers on the right, since they don't know about each other, are only referred to as the partial queue manager. For some reason, queue manager 3 is down. Maybe you brought it down for a backup to add maintenance, but that queue manager and the cluster queue are not available for the full repository to send messages to that particular queue. There is a feature within clustering, MQ clustering. I should be more specific since we have so many different types of clustering being used in products. That we call the little cloud in the middle workload balancing. If a message is targeted for queue manager 3, then it will remain on the transmission queue. However, any new messages will just go between queue manager 1 and queue manager 2. You can have the same server application on both of those queue managers processing data. So this way you're able to continue to process and continue to process. Now, when queue manager 3 is back up and running, any messages that were targeted for it will be flowed to that particular queue manager, and then it will be back into the rotation as far as workload balancing. This is just another way if you're having an application that you have to keep up and running, you can use this mechanism to have continuous flow of your data for processing. Next slide, please. So, again, the goal for WebSphere MQ cluster, you can have applications as a single queue. You can implement it across multiple queues, multiple queue managers. I've given you the link to the queue manager cluster book, and this is the version 6 copy of it, because we've been changing our information center. The way this particular book is written is like a workbook, so I really like it. It gives you a lot of tasks that you can actually try out in your test environment to help you implement clustering and just learn more about it. Next slide, please. Again, the different components of clustering. We mentioned the full repository and the partial repositories. We also talked about a single clustered object. In this case, it was a queue. One of the things you probably noticed in the picture is where is the transmission queue or what transmission queue is being used. In this case, we're using one of our system definitions or default definitions called system.cluster.transmit.queue. All the messages will flow through this particular queue. So if you have an issue where you think, well, where are my messages? One of the first places that you would check is the system cluster transmit queue and see how many messages are building up on that queue. And then you would check to see what the channels are doing or what the status of the channels are doing. And then, of course, we spoke about the workload management feature. Next slide, please. Another option for you if you don't have a high availability product. And this particular section of the presentation is from our Rochester team. On the IBM i or System i platform, they have clustering as well. And one of our team members, David Perez, who used to work in the Rochester team, wrote this part of the presentation for us to give you the information regarding this particular environment. Next slide, please. The I-5 clustering option will allow you to take advantage of independent asks. It also allows you to take advantage of mirroring. And there's also a scenario where you can mix the two environments. Next slide, please. In this particular graphic for you, you can see that you have a primary node and a backup node, and we have QManager A on both sides. You'll notice that we're using an IFAP where we have the QManager library and the IFS, but you're also going to notice that we're using what Rochester refers to is a HSL loop. This environment, or the high-speed link loop, I should say, in this particular configuration or environment, it is not meant for long distances. You can see there documented in the last bullet. So if you're in California and another server's in New York, that's not the best configuration for this particular environment. It needs to be close for proximity. Next slide, please. In this particular slide, we are going to use mirrored IASPs. So you have the primary node and the backup node, and each one has their own ISAP for their particular QManager library and IFS. But you'll notice there's an arrow in between the IASPs, which are green, and we're using geo-mirroring. Again, this is unique. As far as I know, for the IBM platforms, it's unique for our environment, where it's going to mirror what's happening on the primary node to the backup node. And both of these are active. So if something happens to the primary node, for some reason, the queue manager, maybe a power outage or a backup needs to be done, it'll switch to the backup node and begin processing. Next slide, please. This final slide, it may look confusing, and there's a lot going on, and there really is in all cases probably. But you have, this is taking advantage of I5OS clustering and MQ clustering. So node A and node B are backing up each other. So that's why you see QManager A and QManager A prime. You also see QManager B and QManager B prime. And each one has its own independent ASP with their own QManager library and IFS, and they're taking advantage, again, of geo-clustering. Next slide, please. Now, here are some of the links that I was referring to previously that we hope will be very useful for you for learning more about the options that you have with MQ on the IBM I platform. But again, if you have any specific questions when we open up the lines, please ask me. Or if you remember something after the presentation, my email address was on the cover page, and you can send me an email. Many of you, I believe I've talked and, or spoken to you before, and some of you have my direct number, so I know you won't be shy about calling myself or even Kalisa, who's been sitting in here kind of keeping me on track. Next slide, please. Again, some additional recommended reading. The primer if you're very new to MQ. And on this particular slide, I also have given you the link to David Perez's article he has in Developer Works that gives even more detail about using I5OS clustering and MQ clustering. And it's a great article if you have an opportunity to read it. Next slide, please. Now I'll turn the presentation back over to Joseph.
Thank you, Karen, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the line for questions.
Our first question is from Donovan Baldwin. Your line is open.
Yes, I wanted to ask a question about the standby queue managers. that use three servers and what the point of failure is on those three servers. I realize that two of them acted as queue managers and the third acted as sort of, I guess, a file store kind of thing. So, if like, which one would fail and which ones save you from a failure, I guess.
Hello, Donovan.
Hello.
Which one fails?
Yeah, like I think the first two were running the queue manager software, and then a third one didn't even need MQ series installed.
Correct.
So in that case, I guess depending on the client configuration, is it if you lose the third server, neither of the first two work? So really only the first two are protected, or what is the failure points of that?
Oh, okay, yes.
System?
Understand.
Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification. You're correct. If you have server 1 and server 2, and then, of course, server 3, in this case, only had the IFS directory. If server 3 goes down, then both queue managers, both instances of the queue managers are unavailable to you.
Okay.
But if server 1 were to go down and server 2 and 3 are still available, then on server 2, the standby queue manager now becomes your active queue manager.
Okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Muthu. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I mean, I just wanted to get some more information on the multi-instance queue manager. So is there any document that you can share which we can go through for our more information on this multi-instance?
Well, I'm glad you asked because we just rewrote all of that just for IBMI. So if you go into the information center, and do a search for multi-instance IBMI, there's a whole new section on it, and I actually helped write this. So I've mentioned before, my favorite platform is IBMI, and I like step-by-step instructions. So that's the way that we wrote it. It gives you step-by-step instructions on how to configure multi-instance on IBMI and different things that could happen. We've also got several tech notes if you do encounter problems with multi-instance. If you just search our website, www.ibm.com, or go to the MQ portal, we have a lot of tech notes and information for you that way as well. Does that help?
And one more question, is this available for all the platforms or it's only for the IE series?
Multi-instance is supported on Windows as well as on the Unix platforms. However, it does not exist on ZOS.
Okay.
And before anybody asks me, no, you cannot have a queue manager that is on Windows fell over to I series or vice versa.
Okay. And last thing, like when we talked about both clustering as well as the multi-instance, right? So what is we can make the MQ clustering also work as same as high availability as what we talked on the multi-instance, right?
You want to mix multi-instance and a cluster?
Right.
Why?
I mean, currently that we have clustering environment, but we don't operate in a high availability mode with respect to the clustering. I mean, we have the queues defined as clusters, but we are not really using it as a high availability. So is that going forward, using clustering will serve more purpose or changing it to a multi-instance will help more?
It's been my experience with the customer calls that we have that they don't mix clustering and multi-instance. Since in clustering, you have multiple definitions, and when one of the queue managers goes down, one of the partials, for example, in that graphic that we were showing, the other two queue managers, pick up the slack for that particular one. With multi-instance, it's more with a non-clustered environment. So based off of what you said, I'm not sure what the added benefit would be for you.
Okay. So you recommend to use either of the one, right? Either clustering with MQ or go for the multi-instance.
Correct.
Okay. That helps. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Our next question is from Alan. Your line is open.
I just want to a little bit understand the relationship between the MQ clustering and the IBM HACMP clustering?
The relationship of MQ clustering with the i5OS clustering?
Yeah, the HACMP.
They're two separate entities or two separate features.
Okay.
I'm assuming from what I did here on the i5 clustering, I mean, they don't need MQ, and MQ doesn't need the i5 clustering. The i5 clustering is the way for you to do your, you know, not only your operating system, but your hardware, too. And since we are residing on your hardware or on your software as a middle product, you can set up MQ clustering on the QManager just as it just becomes an extra layer of failover for you.
Okay, so that's it's a kind of a separate configuration.
Correct. You have your clustered QManager, and then maybe your system admin decides, well, we need to implement i5OS clustering. You're, as an MQ administrator, that's fine.
Okay.
That's not going to hurt your environment at all. It just, again, adds another layer of security for you.
Okay. So that's on the MQ manager layer. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Our next question is from Andy. Your line is open.
Hello. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to explain this very well. Yeah, we've got a high availability queue manager on a IASP system, and that queue manager is clustered to a full repository on a mainframe system. And when we switch over from our A node to the B node, we have to change the DNS in the connection name, because the mainframe has only got a 48-character limit, so we can't put a comma-delimited connection name in our iSeries queue manager. Have I explained that very well? Do you get?
I got a confused look on my face, and Kalisa's staring at me.
We're using...
I think for this particular one, how about if we talk offline on this one so we can get more details about your environment?
Yeah, it was a question about the con name on a cluster receiver channel and the fact that you can do comma delimited on the iSeries, but you can't do it on the mainframe, and the mainframe holds the full repository. So, yeah, okay, then we'll take it offline.
Yeah, so then we'll need to know what versions of MQ you're running across both.
7.01? Yeah. No, sorry, yes, 7.0.1.6 or thereabouts.
Yeah, for the full repository, you shouldn't have to change the con name on the receiver. The receiver control, for a cluster, the receiver controls the cluster sender.
Yes, but on the iSeries, the connection name is different. The DNS is different for each of the two systems.
Are you using host names or are you using an IP address?
We're using a DNS.
Okay, when you say DNS to me, I'm thinking about the DNS table that has the mappings for the host name and the IP addresses.
Yes, I've been told.
Right, but on the con name for the receiver, the cluster receiver, are you actually specifying the host name or the IP address?
The host name, yes.
So that's why we have the DNS table, because it resolves to the IP address. Okay.
Yes, which are different for each system.
We're going to have to send me an email on how I can contact you.
Yeah, okay then.
Because now I need pictures.
Okay then.
We have no further questions over the phone.
Thank you, Jackie. And it looks like we don't have any questions over the web comments either. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.